listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
So what have you done lately to support a cause, one that helps others and has meaning to you? My guest today, 22-year-old Katie Russell, is helping the cause in which she believes by embarking on the longest charity bike ride in the world. In 70 days, in the summer of 2017, Katie will be part of a group riding over 4,500 miles from Austin, Texas to Anchorage, Alaska, to support efforts for fighting and treating cancer. She's with us to talk about her involvement in the Texas 4000 for Cancer, a student project and nonprofit begun in 2004, which has raised $5 million to support cancer-fighting projects and research. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we're helping the world to realize and to work with the importance, power, and mastery of human emotions. As always, we welcome your questions and comments. We have chats on Blog Talk Radio and on the emotionalpro.com. And you can also call in now, toll free, 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Well, Katie Russell is a recent graduate of the University of Texas at Austin with two degrees, one in public relations and marketing and another in radio, television, film. She's currently working at Trendkite, which is a PR analytics company in Austin, and she's simultaneously training for the longest charity bike ride in the world. Responding to the impact that cancer has had on her, through the many family members who've been diagnosed, Katie was inspired through her close ties to friends who have done the ride in previous years. She's required to raise a dollar a mile, over $4,500, to be a participant in the ride. And so you need to know that Katie's accepting tax-deductible donations, and we'll put the website up on our chat pages. When you donate, then you will be participating in supporting cancer treatment and research efforts in the U.S. that are funded by the Texas 4000 for Cancer, such as LiveStrong, the University of Texas Department of Biomedical Engineering, MD Anderson Cancer Center, Brent's Place, and the American Cancer Society. Katie Russell, welcome to Full Power Living.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today.
It's my pleasure. So start us off by telling us how the Texas 4000 for Cancer got started in 2004.
Yeah, our founder is Chris Condon, and he is like a really emotional guy who is just like amazing to talk to in person. Like, we've had the honor of getting him obviously to come and speak and share his story and like his own personal battle with cancer. And it's really funny how, you know, when Texas 4000 first started, it was really just a couple of people who kind of wanted to get on their bikes, and you know, they were avid cyclists and wanted to get on their bikes and, you know, just bike across the country and fight cancer. And, you know, now it's just flourished into this super strong, like, nonprofit, and not only a nonprofit, but like a leadership organization, which, you know, at this point, hundreds and hundreds of Texas graduates have now gone through. So it's really awesome. And he is really proud of the way it's grown and continues to progress every year.
Wow. Just to do something. Now, he was himself a cancer survivor. So now there's been a ride every year since. Does that mean that you're going on the 13th ride by chance?
Yes, I believe this is the 13th one. I know we had one every year since, and like they've added routes progressively. The first year, there was Rockies, and then they have added, or I can't remember if it was Sierra's Rockies first. Those are the original two. Ozarks is the last route. And basically, the whole idea behind that is that, you know, as it's grown, they wanted to progressively add routes to really touch different parts of the country and, like, spread our message. So, you know, and that's, it definitely started off with just a handful of people, and now it's grown. Like, my team between all three reroutes has about 80 people. So it's definitely grown a lot since he started it.
Wow. Well, you're going on the Sierra route, meaning you're coming out where I am now to the California area and going up to Anchorage. Is that correct?
Yeah. So we have arguably the hardest start because we go straight west through Texas, through the desert and through New Mexico. Oh. So there's a lot of it's known as like the first week or two of really the hardest on Sierra. We do get to the harder elevations when we get up on the, and the headwinds when we get up on the West Coast, you know, out towards Seattle and San Francisco. It's obviously very hilly and windy, but the hot desert during the day and then the really cold desert nights are definitely something that I will be trying to prepare for.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how you can sleep one night in a freezer and the next night.
Yeah, it's a lot of packing, and we really only have like one like pretty small duffel bag to fit everything we need for 70 days. So it's, you know, wow. A lot of intense packing as well.
Okay, so you're saying 70 days. How many miles a day is that as your goal?
The average, like, so it's actually really more than 4,500. We really will be biking, like, so I'm actually on the travel committee, so I've been working on planning the individual routes because each year we try to switch it up slightly so we don't, you know, stay with the same exact people or go to the same exact city and, like, do a program about Texas 4000 in the same exact community. Obviously, we hit recurring communities, but, you know, part of the goal each year is to continue spreading it, you know, to let different people know what we're doing. But we average somewhere over 80, like 80 to like 86 a day. Some of our longest days are 120, sometimes longer. And, you know, some days we have shorter days. Like the first day is a shorter day because it's actually a ride called Atlas where like our friends and family can do like a 25, 50 or like a 70 mile loop to kind of kick us off on day zero. But we average about 80. Yeah, we have to be able to do over 100 a day for sure. That's our big century test is in April. So.
Wow. So if your group is 80 people and you have three different routes that you're going up, one more central to the United States, one between the Sierra and that more central route, and then the Sierra route, how many total people are in your group? It seems like somewhere close to 250, if that's so.
Oh, there's 80 between the three routes. So there's about 25 on each route. Yeah.
Oh, okay. 25 on each route.
Realistically, like, you really couldn't have, I mean, you could possibly, but it gets very dangerous if you have, like, a bunch of, so that's the thing. That's one of the best things about Texas 4000 is where, like, one of the fish charity bike rides, like, we've never had a death or a major injury. We've had, you know, obviously people fall and we've had a broken arm or two, but we really focus on safety, and that's why, like, this is over a 2-year-long commitment to being this organization, because they really, really focus on that, how to be a safe rider and be aware and really work together as a unit.
Okay, so you're talking about this 2-year commitment, and I want to bring in here that this is not an easy group to get into, and I want you to tell us what's involved in even being selected to participate in this project.
Oh, man, that was a time. Texas 4000 was something that I had kind of heard about in passing, but I guess when I was maybe a freshman or sophomore, I didn't quite know what exactly it was. Like, I heard about it, I was like, crazy people biking in Alaska, that sounds terrifying. I don't know if I can ever do that. It was one of the more competitive organizations. Like, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people. I think my year we had 400 to 500 apply or something crazy like that. And there's several rounds of interviews, group and individual, a lot of writing, a lot of references, because some people might see this as an athletic event, which it definitely is very physical on your body, but what Texas 4000 really wants are, like, people who are leaders and motivated and, you know, will stick to the cause of fighting cancer and, you know, and in general just want to make the world a better place, because as hard as the ride is physically, like, mentally and emotionally is, you know, that is, like, your body kind of can go into a zone, like, once you're used to biking certain road mileage, but it's really keeping your head engaged. And so they really want people who, like, feel passionate about it. So, yeah, when I got in, like, I was crying. One of my best friends called me and let me know that he had actually ridden in 2016, and he called me to let me know that I had gotten into it. And I just so crying, happy, called my mom. And it was one of the best days of my life for sure, like, realizing that, like, my life was about to change completely.
So how do you anticipate your life will change from doing this?
It's really something I spend a lot of time thinking about. And, you know, I consider myself a pretty introspective person. And, like, I love thinking about the ways in which, like, my brain and my emotions operate. And I really think that Texas 4000 is something that, like, I will learn, like, so much about pushing myself. And I think finding, you know, that's obviously like a very primitive sort of situation. Like you're really living on a bike, and, you know, if we're not staying at a host, we're camping. It's just, you spend a lot of time, you know, with your own thoughts and obviously with your teammates. But I think it really teaches you to like find the things like that are important to you. Like, why are you riding? Like, why is this important to you? Like, what's important about changing the world? And I'm really excited because I feel like, especially after doing something like this, it will probably be one of the hardest things I ever do in my life. And I think having like the mental strength to do it will definitely like well prepare me for anything else life will throw at me.
Yeah, I had that experience with childbirth because I did natural birth, you know. Since that time in my life, I always felt like I can handle anything. Man, I did childbirth with no medication. I can do anything. So I can imagine it's intense like that, although a much longer experience, I might say.
But, yeah, maybe that'll prepare me for childbirth one day. That's
there you go.
See,
there'll be a snap for you. So now, a lot of people that are doing this ride have had their own lives touched by cancer. Either they've had cancer or they've lost a parent to cancer or their parent has cancer. What's your motivation? What's your connection with cancer?
Yeah, so cancer is something that, unfortunately, you know, it's been something that I have known about, honestly, ever since I can remember. I can remember, you know, being a kid and hearing that this is how your grandpa died, your great-grandpa, your great-grandma, aunts, uncles, and it was something that I never really thought about or honestly understood as a kid. And I just didn't understand, like, why this was a thing that was going to plague my life, honestly. I kind of assumed that my mom would always say, like, you know, I'll probably get it. You probably will, too. Like, it really runs in our family. And but it was almost a very distant thing for me because I hadn't really firsthand experienced it. And it wasn't until about 3 years ago now, my uncle Chuck was diagnosed with lung cancer. And it's the first, like, really close person that I just watched the toll that this disease, like, takes out. And he was, like, such an energetic and, like, happy sort of jester guy of our family, and watching, like, just the life. And I would come home from college and, like, see him, like, at Thanksgiving. It was just, that was, like, really the best last time I saw him. He passed between Thanksgiving and Christmas area. And, like, it was a whole different experience watching it actually
right.
affect my loved ones versus just hearing stories about it.
Right.
And at that point, I really didn't think it would hit any closer. And then about 6 months later, it was before I was about to study abroad, actually. I was a sophomore, at the end of my sophomore year, and my mom had been having some, like, abdominal discomfort. And but she, like, it's funny, she's a nurse, but she puts off going to the doctor a lot. And she was going in for, like, a routine colonoscopy, and they ended up finding that her appendix was enlarged, like, 6 times and had lots of tumors. It looked like they had been growing on and off for, like, a couple years. So they rushed her in immediately and took them out. And luckily, like, they were benign, but we had, like, a good week or two period there where, like, we were waiting for biopsy results and waiting and waiting. And, like, that, like, powerlessness that I felt and, like, just so, like, there was nothing I could do to, like, fix that. Like, I think, like, it really, really struck a nerve with me. And, yeah, I had heard about Tech 4000 before and after this. And, like, I realized to me that, you know, I could look at my family history and I could see the sadness of cancer. And, you know, I could look that, you know, all the people that have died from it. But I could also, like, look at it differently and look at my family as fighters and see that, like, my grandma has survived cancer, like, twice now. And, you know, and see that, you know, I have a chance here to really fight it and not just accept that as a fate of, you know, my family or myself. And,
yep.
You know, to me, I think that it's something of, you know, looking at, I was just felt like I was looking at my history wrong. I just looked at it like it was already written book. And especially after being in Tech 4000, like seeing the constant advancements and constant research and new drugs and techniques is like, there is hope for curing cancer, and that's, you know, why I want to see a Tech 4000 spider back to life.
Right. That's really good. You know, preparing for the program, I started thinking about my relationship with cancer, and my father's mother died of cancer. My father died of cancer. My sister died of cancer. And just this past year, my husband died of cancer. And so I can imagine that there are a lot of people whose lives have been touched by cancer. And like you say, I think the one of the hardest parts of it is it's something that just takes over and starts wasting you. And even our treatment methods up till now anyway have been iffy in a lot of the forms of cancer. Some like lymphoma we're pretty good at fixing up, but it leaves you with this thing that you're watching somebody you love die, and there's not a thing you can do about it.
That's what I totally agree with that, because like, and I think people don't realize that like cancer strikes like 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women. So like, if you don't have anyone close or like someone that you know, like it's just like a very real chance in the future that you will. And you know, that is pretty shocking to me. And you know what you're saying about treatments, like that was one of my favorite days. So in addition to like fundraising and training, we also have to have volunteer hours. And one of the days we went to MD Anderson, which is one of the biggest places like we've continued to donate to with the money we raise, like we give grants there. And we really got to see, we got to speak with a lot of different doctors and nurses and interact with the kids, but also hear about the really cool advances in treatment. And like, they're on the cutting edge, and like, it's getting a whole lot better. Like, not to say that there's like a cure, like, anytime soon, but for sure, like what you're saying with specific types of cancers, they're starting to understand it a lot better, which is really encouraging.
Yeah, we did a program here last year, I think, about how dogs are helping with cancer research also. Not that they get dogs to have cancer and then study them, but they've been using dogs that already have cancer and trying to understand more about what it is. You know, we don't really know whether it's a virus or a, you know, because I work with emotions, I know that anger is underlies every illness that human beings have. And so there's a concern I have that we need to learn to release anger and forgive more as a way of helping also.
No, I totally agree with that. It definitely, I mean, if your mental space isn't good, I think it definitely affects your health as well. I totally believe that.
Okay, so we're up to our first break, Katie. And there's some things I want to know when we come back. What are some of the requirements for you during this program? Like, we see that you've already been to cancer treatment centers and you've learned a lot about cancer. And also, one of the things I was really curious about, because I heard you a while ago say, what are these crazy people doing riding their bikes to Alaska? And my curiosity is, how in the world do you develop the confidence to do this? So think on that. We'll be right back. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You and everyone you know have been born to learn. All humans are on Earth to attend school. People know this intuitively, but they don't really live by it. And now you can. I'm Eileen Dillon. Born to Learn is the title of my latest book, available at emotionalpro.com. The result of 30 years of investigation, which gives you the big picture and the instruction book. Born to Learn gives you information you need to turn your problems into puzzles and then solve them. Life is kinder when we complete our homework assignments. Start today. Order Born to Learn at emotionalpro.com and get a leg up on your life.
Well, welcome back to Full Power Living. Let me remind you to call in now to talk with my guest today, who is Texas 4000 for Cancer bicycle rider and fundraiser, Katie Russell. Our toll-free number is 888-498-0570. Don't be shy. Katie's obviously very well informed. Also on both of our chats, the one on Emotional Pro and the other on Blog Talk Radio, we have a link. If you are moved to support Katie in the work that she's doing, remember she's got to raise at least $4,500 for this ride, and she's putting 2 years of her life into it. So we encourage you to participate also. Next week, we've got a profound program scheduled for you. I'm going to be talking with Raphael Kushner about emotional connection. And you know, in recent years, we've had a lot more talk and information about emotions, but how many of us really know what to do in order to benefit from our emotions? Kushner advocates that we need to feel and experience them within our own bodies, and he'll talk with me next week about how he helps people to do that. So join us on January 19th at 9 a.m. Pacific time, noon Eastern time, for my interview with Raphael Kushner. And we've got a lot of wonderful shows scheduled for you, so go to emotionalpro.com, click subscribe, and we'll put you on the list so you get notified of our upcoming shows. And remember, you can listen on the archives, and you can also subscribe to our broadcasts on iTunes. We have a button on the homepage at emotionalpro.com. Today, I'm talking with a young person who's just embarking on her life, and simultaneously, she's set herself up to embark on a wild undertaking, an over 4,500-mile bicycle trip from Austin, Texas to Anchorage, Alaska. She's a recent graduate of the University of Texas in Austin. So, Katie, before we dive into our regular questions, I want to talk a little bit about fear and doubts. Have you had doubts about whether you could do this project, and does any part of it scare you? And if so, how have you dealt with those things?
That's a good question. Definitely. I had a really good scare. I do think about it. Like one of my biggest worries was getting injured, because that's one of the biggest things that, you know, happens to people, like training, like whether it's, you know, an overuse injury or, you know, you're not properly like fitted on your bike. You know, every year people have to drop or get injured, you know, and that was one of my like biggest fears. And actually a good 4 or 5 months ago, I've been really healthy all my life. I've never broken a bone or anything. And I've been having a lot of like muscle fatigue and weakness. And I actually found out that I was super, super anemic and had about like half of the oxygen in my blood I was supposed to have. And I had to go in for like a double blood transfusion, and over like the next 3 months was going every week to get like iron transfusion in my blood, because I was seriously iron deficient for some reason. And the doctor told me when I went in, I was like, if you do not improve, like there is no chance like your body can handle biking to Alaska. And, you know, luckily mm-hmm. with like, I, you know, they did take really good care of me. One of the coolest things is that, hematologists or like blood specialists work really closely with like oncologists to fight cancer. Uh-huh. And where I was going in and like being treated for anemia, I got to meet a bunch of really awesome like cancer fighters and survivors that were also going through like chemo while I was there getting like iron infusions. So overall, like I was really, really scared, but luckily like I'm fully healthy, ready to go now. But I love the people and the stories that I got to know, and like they're people that I ride for now. But other than that, like I guess I'm definitely scared. Like I would be lying if I said it isn't so daunting. But I also mm-hmm. like, you know, I've seen people do it. I think that I'm mentally preparing myself and physically definitely. I've always been pretty athletic and have been biking a lot, so I think I'll be ready.
Right. I imagine it helps to know and talk with people who've actually completed it. It gives you the idea, okay, this can be done.
Yeah, definitely.
And how do they talk about it? The people you know who've done the ride, what do they have to say about it?
Oh, man. I mean, it's something like, because you get that big question, like, you know, so, you know, what's the biggest takeaway? Like, what did you learn? And they're all like, how do you summarize like all of the emotions and personal growth and, you know, incredible hardship? But I mean, I think the biggest thing that, you know, a lot of them say is kind of cheesy, but I mean, I fully believe it, but don't let it be like find your next Alaska. Don't let this be like the greatest thing you ever do in your life. Like, you know, take all of the lessons, all of the personal growth, all of the, you know, passion that you have for like living a good life and helping others, and you know, continue to push through that the rest of your life. So I think that's definitely one of the biggest takeaways that, you know, I hope to really have.
That's really great. In my work over the years, I've learned a principle that the way something starts off, it tends to continue. So since in your as you're embarking on your adult life, you're doing such a challenging thing, you're likely to do more of those kinds of things, which would be really wonderful. Okay, so before a break, there are a couple of things I want to find out. What do you have to do? You give 2 years of your involvement. How often are you doing something with this project in the time leading up to the ride? And what kinds of requirements do you have to meet?
Oh, man. Well, I feel like it's every day. It really slowly Texas 4000 kind of takes over your life in a lot of ways. We have, you know, weekly meetings as a group. And then I also have like another, you know, couple hour meetings on the travel committee, like I was talking about, that I'm in charge of actually calling the hosts, calling the cities, actually planning. We also do something which is called turn by turns, where we have to go through on Google Earth and look at every road that we're going to be physically biking to make sure, you know, the shoulder is big enough that it's not super gravelly. So we have to make, you know, actual plans of every turn we'll take, all the thousands we take over the course of the journey to Alaska. So that will take a lot of time. And then we have about, it's changed by semester, but somewhere we end up with well over like 100 volunteering hours. The biggest requirements are definitely the 4,500, which is about $1 a mile. My personal goal, like I really want to shoot for $2 a mile. I really hope I could do that because people break 4,500 easily every year if you just, you know, really, really fight and spread your message. And then obviously the biggest requirement is we have to have 2,000 training miles on us before we can go. So those, we have to have like 2,000 miles here training in Austin by May. So that's definitely the biggest one, and the one that has been ramping up. Now I have about over 550 miles under my belt now of training. It's definitely ramping up. My muscles are starting to get sore.
Yes. And I want to congratulate you on purposefully you are spreading your message. I came to Austin to attend your graduation, and you stepped right up and said, "I'd like to be on your radio program."
And, I
would. Yeah, well, that was a good thing to do, and I'm really delighted we could work it out. So, how many miles a week are you riding on your bicycle right now, and what other conditioning do you do?
I'm definitely an avid runner. I'm actually next weekend I'm running the half marathon here in Austin. I do run a lot. And in terms of cycling, we have to ride in ride groups. You can never be riding alone. We have to ride with at least two or three other people just for safety reasons and, you know, to make sure everyone's, you know, keeping track of their miles. I personally try and ride about two or three times a week, usually a longer ride on like a Saturday or Sunday. And then during the week, maybe a couple shorter ones just to get the – because the hardest part about it is you can get 2,000 miles, but it's the consistency that, you know, it's really hard to be biking every day with everyone's schedules of, you know, school, work, you know, your personal life. So that's the biggest adjustment they talk about the first couple weeks, is that, you know, your muscles are strong, but your butt is not necessarily used to being on a seat all day, every
yeah,
day.
That's true.
Usually when I go into the ride, I've got, you know, 4 days, so I have fresh legs. But it's how do you keep going on, you know, legs that are continually exhausted. So.
Wow. So you're learning how to work with your body even as you work up to the actual event. So when does the ride begin?
We leave Austin on June 3rd and we finish on August 11th up in Anchorage.
Wow. All right. And so we've talked about it. There are three routes. You know, I was talking to some people here in California, and they said, oh, I'd like to go and see them. You know, we're not so far away. We could go up and visit. Is that possible? Do people visit you along the way?
Oh, yes. That's really cool, actually. So one of my teammates, this is a question we got a lot. One of my teammates, his name is Chris, he made this really cool thing. It's called whereistexas4000.com. And he basically plotted all of, like, the past routes, the previous route, and, like, has the day. So if you know what day of the route we're on, you could go and see what city we'll be in. And obviously, if you know a rider or want to get in touch, you know, you can for sure contact us. But you could see, like, where we are along our journey. You know, and I'll be trying to keep up with the blog if I can. But I'll probably be doing a lot of journaling because I don't know how much, you know, internet access and time I'll really be wanting to spend writing online. But, you know, I'll definitely, I think I'll be posting pictures for sure, like on my Instagram and, you know, hopefully using my blog on my like Tex 4000 page. But yeah, whereistex4000.com is a really cool place where you could see exactly where we are that day and what city we'll be in. And, you know, if you want to meet up with us, you know, we definitely will be, we do programs in certain cities where we, you know, really spread cancer awareness, prevention, you know, how to be living a healthy lifestyle and, you know, treatment methods. So that'll be something that will be really awesome.
Wow. So now you were talking about contacting people. My understanding when I spoke with you is that you tried to use all the money, as much of the money that you actually raised for cancer, and that there are groups and people along the way that allow you to stay with them, or they arrange meals and feed you and so forth. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So basically, I mean, the whole idea is that, you know, the ride in and of itself is spreading the message and, like, inspire people to fight cancer, and we don't want to be spending all the money people are giving, like, to us to fight cancer on, you know, staying in hotels or buying our own food. So basically, yeah, so we're calling ahead. We get, you know, family members of, you know, previous riders or us or other cancer survivors, and that's really who we try and stay with. Like, one family will be like, we'd love to host you, and then they usually kind of see if some of their surrounding neighbors will let, like, our team of, you know, it's about 25 per route, stay in a couple houses usually. So that's one way. I mean, there's definitely churches other like Boys and Girls Clubs, like some places like that have let us stay. But, you know, if we can't find a city, then we can't. So usually about 20 of the 70, all the routes can't. Sometimes it's more, sometimes less, depending. But, I mean, that's, again, to, like, be trying to save money. And certain routes have actually, the Sierra route in 2016 managed to, like, spend $0 on food. Just, you know, we call ahead to grocery stores, go in, like, hey, you know, we're biking Alaska for cancer. Do you have some bread and some peanut butter? So, yeah, they managed to not spend a dime on food. And that's definitely a goal that each year people really, really try to shoot for, because, you know, the money that people are giving us means so much to each one of us for this cause. And, you know, we want to be turning around, like, some of the parts I'm really excited for is to really visit some of the awesome places that we grant out the money to. And one of the places that Rocky's actually goes is called Brent's Place, and it's this place that takes care of children with cancer and their families. And, you know, from what I've heard, like, one of my, like, really close friends went there, and, like, the connections that you have with the kids and, like, the way that seeing where the money we're raising actually goes is just, like, so impactful.
Right. Now, you, as I am recalling, you also do some cancer education along the way. Is that so?
Yeah, so that's when I talk about giving a program. I realize sometimes my Texas 4000 lingo is not something everyone's familiar with, but the programs we give are usually we give them, like, every couple of days, and they're in cities just, and that's where we pass out things like sunscreen, and we talk about, you know, how to live a healthy lifestyle, like, definitely certain things that contribute to, like, you know, obviously there's no perfect, if you do X, Y, and Z, you won't get cancer, but we know at this point there are, like, lots of habits, you know, smoking, you know, way beyond the sun too much, you know, melanoma, like, so there's lots of things like that, but especially in, like, areas, you know, covered with poverty, they don't know a lot of these things, and it's it's really, really cool to be sharing that with people and, you know, just spread our message. And it's definitely spreading prevention, but it's also, like, trying to give people hope and know that there are people out there who see this disease and, like, really want to make a positive impact in changing it. So.
Oh, good. So now I want to make sure that we help this project as much as we can. And the way I'd like to do it right now is I want you to tell us what you know, where the three routes go, and also how, if somebody along those routes would like to help you in some way, how can they let you know that they're wanting to help you?
So the three routes, so there's the Sierra route, which I said that goes west through New Mexico. I mean, it'd be easiest, honestly, to get on their website because I don't know specifically every, you know, city.
And the website is Texas4000.com?
Texas4000.org.
Org.
Okay. if you Google Texas4000, it pops right up.
Right.
But, you know, that's a good way. There's really interactive maps. You can also see all of our individual rider stories. Like for each person that has really ever been a part of the organization on there. And so that's the West Coast route. And then there's one that goes up, which is called Rockies, which goes really straight more north up through Colorado, and then hooks left. And then Ozarks is the one that goes kind of crazy. It goes east. They go through Nashville, up through Chicago, and then they hook way, way west. And then we meet up, and we actually do the last 10 days all together once we are up in Canada and Alaska. I would say the best way, obviously, like, helping me personally, like, I'm really trying to push on fundraising is something that, you know, I really want to, like, way cross over 4,500. And if it's something that, you know, you'd want to be helping out in any cities, if you live in any of those cities, you could definitely shoot me an email. You can reach out to Texas4000. It should be really easy. You can get involved. There's a whole lot of information. But you can email me personally or encourage anything. I would love it that's something we definitely, if there's contact, people that want to help, any dollar, any food, any house, any person we can come hug along the way is, you know, that's what it's all about.
So. That's great. So let me just say that those of you who are listening on our chats, we've listed the place where you could make a donation to help Katie. Let me just read it out. It's www.texas4000.org/rider/2017/Sierra, S-I-E-R-R-A, /Katie, K-A-T-I-E-Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L. And so that's on that, but for those of you who are listening on the archives, that's a place where you can donate and you can find out more about the Texas 4000 ride itself and all the people who are participating at texas4000.org. And also, you told us about where is texas4000.com, Katie, so that's really great.
Another part I'd like to add, too, is that, you know, as much as, you know, we talk about donations and things like that, but one of the best traditions that we do before every meeting, before every ride that we ride, you know, whatever time of the morning it is, we get up and do something called ride dedication, which is where we go around, like, we stand in a circle and we talk about and, like, share specific people, specific stories, cancer fighters, survivors, loved ones we've lost. And we share it with a group, and we share that story. And it's really one of the most beautiful traditions we have. So even if, like, donating is not something you are capable of doing, like, reaching out, encouraging, let me know of, like, a loved one or someone that you care about. Because not only would I be, like, riding with their story, fighting with them to Alaska, but my entire team, we keep a track of all of them. And it's really one of the most beautiful things, I think, that we do, because one of those days when, like, you don't feel like getting on your bike and you're so tired, like, those are the people and the stories and the passion that keeps us going. So, yeah.
Well, before you go, I'd like to give you a copy of the video of your aunt Kariak, who died of ovarian cancer. And she did a dance 7 weeks before she died. talking about what cancer had done to her dancer's body and bringing awareness to people. It's a beautifully done thing, and I hope I have the copy of it, because that would be her story is really wonderful to share. She gave 2 1-hour dance theater performances 7 weeks before she died of cancer, which was astounding.
Wow.
So, yes.
Yeah,
so,
I heard about it when I was younger, but I never saw it. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Well, we'll give it to you because that might be helpful also. So what I haven't mentioned, Katie, is that you are my niece. You are the daughter of my sister, Marty Russell. And I'm very, very proud of you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Be proud of me when I finish. That's one of the weirdest things, too, is when we meet people and they're like, oh, like you're back in Alaska. And like, I can't wait to be done with it because I feel so weird. Like, I want to do it. I feel strange. And people, like, it was also really strange before we got our bikes. Like, when we obviously were volunteering, people were like, oh, it's so inspiring. Like, you guys are so athletic. You're so strong, so much stamina. And, like, we hadn't even started biking yet. So I look forward to completing it.
Right. Well, yes, I'm sure you do. And enjoying every step of the way and having somebody be proud of you every step of the way. And I know there are a number of people that are proud of you. We're up to our second break. We're talking about a most remarkable project, Texas 4000 for Cancer, which is at texas4000.org, with Katie Russell, who will be taking off on June 3rd to participate in this 70-day ride. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
How would you parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student? As a host for an exchange student, you'd have 5 main jobs to do. Those are the same 5 jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of the Exchange Student Model for Parenting, written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download the Exchange Student Model for Parenting today.
So in case you're just joining us, I'm talking with Katie Russell today, who's taking part in the Texas 4000 for Cancer, which is the longest charity bike ride in the world that was started by students at the University of Texas, going over more than 4,500 miles from Austin, Texas to Anchorage, Alaska. It starts on June 3rd and goes into August, 70 days of riding. And if you have any comment or question for Katie, we're at 888-498-0570, and we welcome your comments. So now, Katie, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, boy, this is really doing a lot for you, and I can imagine with the kind of enthusiasm and information and caring that you have, it's going to do a lot for other people. But in preparing for this program, I spoke with a friend of mine who said, why are they wasting their time doing all of this stuff when they could just ask people for donations and be done with it? And do you have an answer? You know, why don't you just,
you know,
yeah, go ahead.
I think when you think about it, obviously people, I mean, and I think I draw a lot of that even myself. I mean, people hear about cancer, but you know, and I think it's awful, but a lot of people are like, oh, like maybe we go do that one 5K that one time for, you know, breast cancer awareness. But there are small things that I think, you know, sort of people are really like called to get involved in. But I think here, like, at least for me, the things in life that I'm most drawn to are like other people's passions. And I think the whole the whole experience of doing the ride, and, you know, when we go into cities, when we volunteer anywhere, when people really, like, see the passion that is behind in each and every one of us as riders, you know, that's what people are, like, drawn to, want to donate to, want to support. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's to fight cancer, but it's really, like, I think it's beautiful. I mean, it's one of the things that, you know, it just inspired me talking with, you know, my friends and loved ones who have done this before, and, like, seeing the passion behind them wanting to fight this disease, it makes you want to fight it so much with them, you know? So I would say to that, I mean, yes, we could just not do, but we just be, you know, some kids who care about cancer, but it's, you know, what are you personally sacrificing? You know, what is my stake in it? You know, what is, you know, I'm putting my body, my mind through, like, a whole lot of things, but, you know, none of what I'm doing compares to what it's like to have cancer. And that's, you know, when I think of my hardest days, when I, you know, so when I did my first 50 miles and I thought my legs were going to fall off, you know, I just think, you know, sucks, but having cancer is so, so much worse. And, you know, if this is what I have to endure compared to what, you know, the thousands, millions of people that have undergone chemo and, you know, lost their fights to cancer, like, oh, I can do this all day.
Wow. So that's a really great, really great answer. I remember reading in a book one time about leadership, and I know leadership is very involved in this project. Mm-hmm. And the quote was something like this. It said, there are two ways to lead. One is to say, there's the sign, follow the path, go that way. And the other is to go down the path and say, follow me.
Yeah.
And that's the one that you're doing, follow me. That's really great.
That's a great summary of it.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned a while ago your equipment. And I was curious about that. Do you have to buy your own equipment? Is there an equipment fund? Does everybody ride the same kind of bicycle? What is with equipment?
Yeah, a lot of that is really on us because as a nonprofit, you know, it is something you definitely sign up for, an individual financial responsibility on yourself. We work with a company called Bicycle World here, which works on getting our bikes at, like, a discounted price. We all do have the same brand of bikes. Just for training purposes and obviously, you know, knowing how to fix them all together when things happen along the ride. But that's really the only thing that when we complete it, we do get to keep our bikes at the end, but all the rest of, like, all the other gears and jerseys and shorts and gloves and CO2 cartridges for changing flat tires, you know, a lot of that is all on us individually. And, that's definitely something that was definitely a factor when I got in, and that I am, you know, my parents luckily have, like, they're helping me about with half of it, but it's something that, you know, I'm using my, you know, personal funds that I've saved and what I'm working with to do all that.
Oh, wow. So are all the bikes the same, or you get your own kind?
You know, they're all the same. They're like a felt bike. There is like a, this year they actually have like a male version and a female version of bikes. But all the tall girls, such as myself, I'm like 5'9", I have the male version. If you're a tall girl, you got the guy's version. But they're all, like, the parts are all very similar. They're just slightly different colors, and the frames are a little different. But, yeah, they're all the same because – so what you're talking about, like, the leadership portion, about the really cool thing that I think people don't always know is that Texas 4000 is, like, student-run. All of our leaders, all of our planners, like, we have people that have to learn how to become bike mechanics, that are in charge of planning the route, getting in contact with businesses, where we're staying. So that's the leadership portion of this, is that, you know, it's a really big stake. Every person on our team is responsible for something very important. And if, you know, they don't do their job, you know, like, someone else has to step in. And we have a staff, which is supportive, and obviously alumni and a board on the nonprofit. But, you know, the day-to-day operational and on the ride, it's just us. You know, there's no older adults following us with cars, you know, wiping our foreheads when we get sweaty. So.
Wow. So you, I think you told me that you don't have to ride every single day because among the 25 of you on a route, you have a van, and that's where your belongings are put, so that,
yeah,
you don't have
so-
to ride them. Yeah.
Yeah. So for safety purposes, obviously, we have about three, so we call them SAG vans that we have to have, mainly because, you know, if there's ever storms, there's like, for instance, there's some mountain passes that, if, you know, it's too dangerous, there's traffic, or, you know, there's really bad lightning. If it's ever a point of safety, we have to be able to load all of the people and all of the bikes to, you know, be safe as well. So that is something. So I would say about 2 or 3 out of the days, like we do rotate, you know. So those are the people, basically, whenever you're driving that SAG, you're in charge of, you know, if someone gets hurt or someone has a flat tire, you can come help. But the main part is setting up rest stops, because, you know, we, as much as we're biking like 8 or 9 hours, sometimes more a day, you know, we do take breaks every like 20-ish miles. So those people in the vans are in charge of going into the cities ahead of time, getting some donated food, setting up a rest stop to really support and like keep those people that are riding going. So that's kind of what's really cool, is as much as you would think that, really funny, like people are like, oh, I get those 2 or 3 days of break. A lot of times people are really like, when I hear people talk about it, they're like, I hated like not being off the bike and like being there with my teammates, you know? You feel like you missed out, but it's also really cool to be able to support them when they're coming in after, you know, 100-mile day and cheering them on and, you know, giving that energy to them. So, yeah.
That's really quite a logistical experience. Speaking of logistics, I know you're working now at Trendkite, but you're going to take 3 months off to do this ride. How do you do that? How do people do that with workplaces? Many people that are doing the ride are students, but you've now graduated.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that is actually so, so awesome. So I was interning here in my last semester of college. And now I'm working, like, they're working on basically putting together for me, like, a contract right now for, like, the next, like, 5 months for me to continue working here, but also training, and then officially full-time hiring me, like, for legality purposes right when I get back in August. And they're a company that has been so supportive, all the people here. And my VP of marketing, actually, he was my first boss back when I was, that was my first internship I ever had, really had no idea what I wanted to do. But he worked at this really small startup, and he's one of the people who wrote me one of those references to get into Texas 4000. And, you know, he's always followed me in my career, and it ended up being, a couple years later, he was like, hey, like, I work at Trendkite, you should come check it out. And I ended up, you know, following up the company and working here. And, so Russ is my boss, and, he's one of the main reasons that, you know, knew about Texas 4000 and supported it, and, like, you know, obviously, like, I love talking about it, and I think it's hard when you hear someone talk about why they want to do it, like, not to get excited. That's how I felt before I was in it. I thought everyone who did it was the coolest person ever, and now I'm just,
Now you're one of the cool people.
Producer Paul, interrupting here, we actually have a couple of callers. We'd like to start out with Mom, if that's okay.
Okay.
Hi, Mom.
Hey, hon. Hey, sis.
Hi,
how's it going?
Hi, Marty.
Hey, how's it going? Well, I just wanted to say that we're really proud of our kiddo. She's been training hard and raising funds and all for a good cause. Just pretty proud of her dedication and love of life.
Thank you, Mom.
Yes, and we're grateful to you for your support, too. We hear you now own a lot of bicycle equipment, so that's good.
Yes, we do. It keeps growing.
Well, thank you for listening and for calling in, Marty. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Thanks,
all right,
Mom.
Take care. All right.
All right.
Bye.
And we also have a call from Tanner. Tanner, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you? What's your question?
Good. So basically, I wanted to know what you look forward to most. You talked earlier about how you're a really introspective person, and I was just wondering if there's anything kind of in particular that you're ready to reflect on or that you'd like to find out about yourself when you go on this journey.
What a great question.
That's a really good question. I guess for me, like, I think something that I think a lot about in my time and, like, how I want to spend my days or what are the most important things to me and, like, that really, like, I guess bring me happiness. And I think that finding, like, ways to spend my time and I don't know. I think it's a really hard question to answer until I'm there. But I think, like, the most important thing for me is to be aware of it and, like, just be aware of, like, my own, like, mental happiness and, like, the things that I think I will learn. And, like, I think a big part of it will be, like, feeding off of, like, other people's energy and all the other, like, survivors and people. And, like, I think it's not something that I could know yet, because obviously I don't think I have that clarity necessarily. But it's definitely something that I really look forward to really growing into. And I do think it will make me, like, so much of a stronger person than I am even now. And I can't wait for that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Tanner's question is a good one, and I like your answer that you can't know yet. This is an event in your life that will have impact on you that you can't even anticipate. I think that's another really wonderful aspect of what you're doing, because there are a lot of people who spend their lives playing safe. And this is not playing safe. You know, you're being as safe as you can be, but you're testing your physical self. You're testing your mental capacity to stick with something. You're taking a lot of responsibility. You're pushing yourself to learn. You're going to push your body to places it's probably never been before. And that's not comfortable. And most of us like to stay comfortable. So I think it's really great that you're, in a way, stepping off the edge to do this project.
Yeah, that was a bit of a separate question. It was hard for me to answer. But I think that's something I know that I do, like, thrive in routine. Like, I love cooking and running and things like that. But I think a lot of times, really, the experiences and things that make you feel the most they're not always planned, they're unexpected, they come out of left field. And, I really think that's grow as a person. Like, life's what happens when you're busy making other plans, of course.
Right.
You know, I truly believe that. And, you know, this is, like, obviously a huge unknown of what I'm going into, but, you know, I couldn't be more excited of all the things I'll be experiencing. So
great. Well, let me just say that over the years of being a therapist, one of the things I've learned is that taking responsibility builds your self-esteem. So that's another plus that I expect you will get. So we really have to stop. I've so enjoyed learning about this and talking with you. I find it inspiring that a person who is young and getting started with your life, that you are so motivated to dedicate your time and effort to help other people who are ill. And there's no doubt it's going to change your life. And it's going to change the life of people who are diagnosed with cancer, or people who don't have to get cancer because of some of the things that may be learned as a result of your donations. So thank you for engaging our world in a way that's meaningful to you, but also helps others. And I wish you the very best in this, in the lead up and in the ride. And thank you, Katie, for letting me know about this so that we could feature this project. Thank you for being on Full Power Living.
I wish we had more time.
Well, there's a lot we could talk about. All right. We'll just have to do this again sometime. It's so fun. Okay.
That sounds good.
All right. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. So remember the Texas4000.org, place where you can donate is on the chats on Blog Talk Radio and EmotionalPro.com. The routes you can find out more about is on whereistexas4000.com and texas4000.org. You can find profiles of the riders, and do feel free to donate, to share, to offer somebody that you'd like for the group to do their ride dedication for, as Katie invited you. So next week, Rafael Kushner is talking to me about emotional connection, which is a way of understanding and working with emotions that can change your life in immediate and powerful ways. And we talked today about how releasing anger can also positively influence our health. So I'm very much looking forward to this conversation. And if you can't be with us in person, listen to the archives, subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And if you can, be here with us next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time for my conversation with Raphael Kushner on emotional connection. Full Power Living's producer is Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media. And for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.